adjust your dial. Spooky season has begun at the Retro Video Store.
Welcome, everyone, to the Retro Video Store podcast. I'm your host, Eric.
Hi, Eric.
And that's my co-host, Neil.
I'm Neil, here in California, where I have no clue how the wildfires are. And we would leave that up to Dave if he were here, but he's not because of wildfire reasons.
I have heard a rumor, this is the last time I talked to David, that he'll be back in civilized country on the 16th. So we'll see.
Cool. We have to make sure we choose a movie that he's not really fond of for that. We need to.
Yeah.
We got to learn him somehow.
Teach him to spend so much time away.
Yeah. Fighting fires, whatever.
So how's your week been?
My week was insane. My son had fall break. So we were down in Orange County, went to Disneyland. We were down there for about 4 days. So that pretty much consumed the entire week. Great thing was, I ate everything with no guilt because I was putting in like 5 to 7 miles of walking every day. So I figured all the extra calories were great. So I got to tell you, if you go down and you go to Disneyland, they have churro toffee. That
sounds good.
It's amazing. It's a religious experience and it's ridiculous how much of it I ate, but churro toffee, highly recommend.
You sent me a picture of you like double fisting some churros.
It
sounds dirty, but you had a lot of churros in your hand. So
that was about $35 worth of churros in that picture.
Oh my God.
You know what? If you're going to go, you may as well go big. If you're going to do it, you're going to
do it halfway, man. Just jump in there.
Yeah. Like I've got a little bit of, got a little bit of surgery coming up in about 2 weeks. We've been talking about that. So I figured I may as well get myself good and fat so that while I'm rehabbing, I've got a reason to do even more exercise. So,
all right.
This is pre-planning. It's going to take some work, but I'm willing to put on the weight.
Somebody's got to do it.
And I'm the man for the job. So while I was down gallivanting at Disney, riding Rise of the Resistance, probably the coolest ride there that they've got that I've ever ridden. What were you doing?
I was, I had kind of a long week. I was sick 2 days, so that gave me a lot of time to consume media. I watched a lot of stuff, but I'll ask you first, did you watch anything besides Prince of Darkness this week?
I had to watch Prince of Darkness in like measured spurts in Disneyland, which felt kind of wrong. To be watching that movie in the happiest place on earth. Because we got back late last night and then today was basically just putting the feet up, resting the joints, just, you know, washing the massive clothes from the whole family. And then again, trying to watch the movie in spurts. This was not a movie watching week, but I did make it through Prince of Darkness. It just took a little bit longer than it normally does. We didn't even watch anything in the hotel room. When we get back, we were all just so super tired. We'd eat, we'd hang out because my brother-in-law and his family came too. We'd hang out as a family and then sleep and wake right back up and go filling our bodies with incredibly, incredibly salty, fatty food.
Well, since I was sick, I kind of sat out and I watched a lot of stuff on Tubi. For some reason, I was just like obsessed with what Tubi had to offer. And I watched a documentary called American Grindhouse, which is all about grindhouse cinema from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, which is really, really good. Then I watched a documentary on Roger Corman, and it was really good. It's also on Tubi, and it's just really interesting story of Roger Corman starting and how he just kind of developed the whole exploitation cinema with American International Pictures and then with New World Pictures, and how currently he's doing all sorts of like sci-fi movies. Which is kind of interesting to me that he's still doing these low budget monster movies even to today when he's 91 years old. So it was kind of a cool movie to watch.
I think Tubi's really become your jam with that vast library they have of really bad horror films.
Yeah, it's really kind of fun to watch a lot of they have some really interesting movie documentaries. There's one called Not Quite Hollywood about the Australian movie industry that is really, really funny and crazy. I started watching it. I'd seen it before. I hadn't finished it yet on the second go around, but also watched Prince of Darkness twice. So, I've been kind of a couch bound and watching a lot of movies, but I'm feeling great today. I'm in a great mood. Good mood today.
Good. I'll be jamming on the films in 14 days.
I'll probably. Oh yeah, you will be convalescing.
Yes, I will be, and yeah, we'll. And you know what? For everybody listening, we care so much that we're going to record a podcast before I get cut into, just so that you guys have some quality entertainment. Because afterwards, I thought it'd be fun afterwards because I'd be just high as a kite and God knows what I'd say. But we're going to do it beforehand.
That'll be interesting. Neil, all high on painkillers. Tell us about Halloween. What'd you think?
According to my wife, I'm very, very entertaining when I come out of anesthesia.
I'm afraid that my, you know, to be recorded on anesthesia, what I would say wind up on Reddit. And there's like this kind of, I think there's a subreddit called like anesthesia theater, like Anest Theater or something like that. And they just talk, they show people who are coming off anesthesia. It's kind of amusing.
Apparently I'm very well behaved. I just sit there and I rant at them until they bring my wife in the room. And then I talk about all my wife's attributes that I enjoy directly to her. So at least I'm a very predictable sort of that.
That's good.
Unfortunately, I've had way too many surgeries thanks to my hobbies, which I am now officially retired from. So I'm going to become a gym rat and do yoga, but no more of the murder yoga, no more of the wrestling around on the floors. I'm tired of getting broken.
Folding clothes with people still inside
exactly.
them.
Exactly. Exactly. I figure I got enough that if the average dude on the street does something, I got enough to absolutely murder him. So as long as it's not some like International Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Federation, like gold medalist, I'll be fine.
All right. Good to know. Good to know. All right. Well, before we jump into Prince of Darkness from 1987, I want to remind you to send us an email about your experiences with forbidden media, stuff that was too scary for you to watch or forbidden by your parents or family or church or whoever to watch. Let us know about that. And also, I started a Spotify playlist full of awesome Halloween music, full of metal and punk and goth and new wave and movie music and stuff. It's called the Retro Video Store Halloween Playlist. So look that up. We'll be adding some more music as we can, but it's got about 3 hours worth of music right now. So check that out. I am dedicated to ancillary product, I mean, or ancillary kind of, you know, integration here.
Okay. Go get it. I have yet to contribute to that because Eric was working on this while I was in Southern California rather than being in Northern California, but I'll give that a listen and put my 2 cents in there because there's got to be some King Diamond and some Danzig and some Amon Amarth. And
I got some Misfits in there. I've got some Halloween. I need to add some Danzig. I forgot about that. I need to put some, like, you know, I'm the Wolf or something like that.
Oh, we need to get, listen, hell, what were you looking for? Ooh, yeah. Let's get some bad 80s stuff in there, too.
I've got, like, Satan is Real by Creator, which is a good song.
That is so good.
So, yeah, lots of good stuff. You're not going to find Thriller or the Monster Mash or any of that kind of, like, normal stuff you read on Halloween song playlist. You're going to get some cool stuff.
Did you put, what's that weird band you listen to with the guy that dresses up like a bishop or whatever he is?
Oh, Ghost. I got 2 Ghost songs on there. Year Zero and If You Have Ghosts. Those are only two. I thought I'd spare us too much Ghost on there, but so I've got 2 songs on there.
Yeah. Okay.
I know you don't care for them, but I love them.
I mean, it's okay. I mean, everyone has a right to be wrong about something. It's good. Put some Ghost on there.
All right. Let's hit Prince of Darkness here. I mention that this is one of my favorite horror movies?
No, I just love your reactions when I say stuff that presses buttons. You're like, yeah, all right, fine. You did mention to me, I don't know if you mentioned it to everybody that's listening, that yes, this is one of your favorite movies.
Well, I had 2 experiences with Prince of Darkness. I watched it earlier in this week, and it's maybe because I didn't feel good. I was a little bored, and wasn't really enjoying it, and I felt bad. I'm like, oh my God, is this movie not holding up as much as I thought it was going to? And I think a lot of times when you watch a horror movie, it has to do with your mindset. Are you willing to receive a horror movie? Are you willing to put up with some of the stuff that horror movies have? Or are you in that mood to watch something scary? I watched it again today, and I was relieved to realize that I still love it, that even though it's got some flaws, it's still fun and unique and original. So I had a good time with it today.
I have a hard time not liking John Carpenter movies. There's just something about his general style. Although Ghosts of Mars, I really expected more out of, but I think that was basically, it was just a hard time taking Ice Cube serious doing anything.
Yeah.
That one had potential, but I think that one was like John Carpenter needed to hand that off to somebody else. I think at that point he was a little bit done as far as vision wise.
Yeah.
But I generally like his movies. I dig the visuals. I dig the way he does the sound. Cause he's got those like unrelenting, like electronic, cause he's a frustrated musician, you know, all the soundtrack to it. Mm-hmm. That's always really good. And then of course, even if you didn't know it was John Carpenter, as soon as the credits come up, you're like, that's a John Carpenter movie.
Yeah. There's that unique John Carpenter font that we've talked about when we did Escape from New York. And also the music, that is just, his music is so kind of, one belongs with the other. They're kind of like the complete package. His unique visuals, he has a very unique style, the way the art direction and cinematography, it looks a certain way, but his music is so essential to complete that feeling, that mood that is, you know, in the movies he makes.
Very much so.
So I want you to read the Internet Movie Database tagline. And this is one of the worst ever because it is completely wrong.
All right. A group of graduate students and scientists uncover an ancient canister in an abandoned church. But when they open the container, they inadvertently unleash a strange liquid and an evil force on all humanity. Say it.
Totally wrong.
Okay. It's like they didn't even watch the movie.
I know. It's like either that or whoever wrote the tagline didn't understand the movie or, yeah, just maybe watched the read a synopsis on Wikipedia or did something and didn't really understand what the movie was about. That's completely and utterly wrong.
Okay. But Eric, if you were going to write an IMDb tagline about this, what would you say?
I'd say it's The Big Bang Theory versus Satan. I thought about that the first time I watched it. I just wrote that down. I'm like, yeah, this is like The Big Bang Theory versus Satan. It's grad students and other people in, you know, in theoretical physics and other things that are trying to understand Satan. So, yeah, that's my synopsis of the movie.
I was still waiting for Subatomic Jesus.
Yes, Neil came up with Subatomic Jesus, which is like a perfect name for a punk band. I would go see Subatomic Jesus right now.
It'd be so good.
You could say their first album would be called like The Devil's Lava Lamp.
I think that's actually
Subatomic Genius.
No, I think that would be a great name for the container down in the bottom of the church would be The Devil's Lava Lamp.
Well, yeah, I wrote that down earlier. The Devil's Lava Lamp.
That totally works.
So released on October 23rd of 1987, right before Halloween. This was a movie that John Carpenter did with independent financing. He had a run of three movies that were all big studio productions. He had Starman, and then he had Big Trouble in Little China, and had Christine, not in the, you know, that particular order, but he had those three movies that were done by a bigger studio, and he was kind of sick of having those kind of restrictions, so he wanted to do something that was totally his vision. So he got $3 million, which was a low budget for even for 1987, rounded up his cast of characters that he enjoys working with, you know, character actors, and he wrote Prince of Darkness under the pseudonym of Martin Quatermass, which is an homage to the BBC television serial and a Hammer Horror series, the Quatermass Experiment.
I'm sorry, man. You tell me Victor Wong is in a movie and I am there.
Yes. Cause yeah, this movie has the great people that you see in John Carpenter movies. He's got Donald Pleasance, Victor Wong, Dennis Dunn. If it had Jamie Lee Curtis and Kurt Russell, it would have been the complete cast. Oh, and Tom Holland. or no, Tom Atkinson's. I'm sorry, Tom Atkins. Not that would have been like your full.
Yeah, Tom Holland would have been completely different. It would have been either the one like directory sound dude or Spider-Man. And I don't think this is really a movie for Spider-Man.
I don't think Spider-Man Tom Holland was even born then. Tom Holland, the director, was though.
Well, I was 15 when this came out, so I 100% remember going to see this in the theater because you could get your driver's license at 15 in New Mexico at the time, and I had my driver's license. I remember going to see this. Dug that movie.
This was a rental for me. I remember wanting to see this in the theater, and for some reason, I don't know I didn't get to see it in the theater, but when it came out on video, I rented this numerous times, and when it eventually came on HBO, I taped it and watched it over and over again as well. So I've watched this movie a lot.
It was good. I mean, I did watch it. You and I actually watched this on video a couple times that I can think of.
Yes, I'm firing up the VCR and putting this movie in.
Okay, but
I sound old, firing up the VCR.
All right. Okay, first off, first cast, Jameson Parker, Simon & Simon with the porn stash, working it hardcore as one of the leads in this movie.
Well, the funny thing is I did not realize he was in Simon & Simon, and this is the only movie that I recognize him in, so I didn't even notice that until I was looking up his filmography. I go, oh, Simon & Simon, that show was on for like 9 years. I think it was like a Magnum P.I. spinoff. Wasn't Simon & Simon a Magnum P.I. spinoff?
I don't know, but they had a lot of shows that were like that on TV at the time. So I'm thinking, I don't think it may not have been a spinoff, but spinoff in like the whole idea and concept of it.
Well, the funny thing about this movie to me, and I've seen this movie so many times, is I can never remember any characters' names. I just know who they are. There's mustache grad student. There's redheaded lady. There's the lady with the glasses. And then there's the priest. And there is Barack, the professor. And then there is Walter. That's the only people I remember. I didn't really like remember their names until today, where I actually was really listening for them and writing them down. So I love this movie, but I think that might be the cast is so big that you kind of forget who everybody is or what their names are.
So yeah, I would not know anybody's names. For me, it's always Simon & Simon. It's Donald Pleasant and it's Wang. What's in the bottle, Wang? Righteous Buzz. And then the African-American guy.
Yeah, yeah.
He is so familiar and unfamiliar all at the same time.
Yeah. Let's look him up. I forget his name, but he's very sticks out in this movie quite a bit. Jesse Lawrence Ferguson is Calder, and he was in Dark Man, Boys in the Hood, Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai. Wow, he's in a lot of things. Star Trek The Next Generation. Is Lutan. I'm not sure who that is. I'm not a big Star Trek fan or follower. Saint Elsewhere, The A-Team, Remington Steele. So he was in tons of stuff.
Yeah, he's got one of those faces. He's a supporting actor for tons and tons of things, but he was never like a lead kind of dude.
Yeah, definitely a character actor. And, oh, he was the cop in Boys in the Hood that held up... Ice Cube and Cuba Gooding Jr. It was Haslam and stuff like that. You see his picture. I was like, oh, okay, that's who he is, man. All right, the guy's been a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. He was, and incredibly sweaty.
Yes, he puts on a sweaty performance. Yeah,
there's quite a few sweaty performances in this movie. There was a little bit of dampness.
Well, one thing I like a lot about the movie is that it's got a diverse cast and none of them are like super young. You don't get like the super young person who's like, this person's supposed to be a quantum physics student or, PhD candidate. You get people who are like maybe in their late 20s, early 30s, maybe in their 40s even in this movie or who are grad students. And the two most important characters are Victor Wong and Donald Pleasance, guys who are in their 60s. So it's kind of nice not to see such a youth focused kind of project.
Well, having done some graduate work, I'm looking around the room and realizing now that they've changed what upper level degrees are And when I'm looking around, like, I am the oldest person in this room and probably the only one with a mortgage when I was going through and getting all my degrees. Mm-hmm. So it's changed a bit now. Dude, they fast track people for master's degrees now. It's absolutely insane. I'm meeting kids that are getting out. Oh, I got my master's in a year and a half. Like, what the hell you did? What was your paper on? Oh, I didn't have to write one. That's why I hate you.
Yeah, I remember my wife had to write her master's thesis and all this kind of stuff. It was a huge ordeal.
Yeah, those are super fun. Good times for everybody.
So let's start about them. Let's get into the movie proper. You got, like we said, Jameson Parker is Brian Marsh, and Donald Pleasance is just the priest. That's his actual credit, is just the priest. And then Victor Wong, as we've talked about, Professor Howard Birak, Lisa Blount, who is in Dead and Buried and An Officer and Gentleman. She is Catherine Danforth. Dennis Dunn is Walter, who is a character definitely you remember in the movie. And Susan Blanchard is Kelly, who becomes the pizza-faced son of Satan in this movie. And Anne-Marie Howard is Susan, you know, the radiologist with glasses, which they say every time they say, "Where's Susan?" They're like, "Who? The radiologist with glasses." It's an ongoing joke. They say it like three times. I think John Carpenter knew that his cast was so big that you had to kind of like do that to kind of explain what's going on. I love when I see a movie with the old Universal Pictures opening, you know, with just the globe spinning and then Universal in the yellow font and stuff. It just gives you a nice sense memory of those older movies.
Well, recedes
when you see that.
Yeah, recedes into the distance, but a little jerky.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
exactly.
We talked about John Carpenter's soundtrack. It is really, really good. It's a little overbearing when I watched it originally because there's so little dialogue for the first like 20 minutes of the movie that it's all soundtrack with just little snippets of dialogue, because this movie has the longest credit sequence, opening credit sequence ever.
It got a little bit Terminator chase scene for me.
She's like, "All right, let's get to it."
All right. You're on campus. We get it. You're walking around everywhere. You're going to, okay, done. All right, cool. Let's get to some Satan.
Yes, let's get to some Satan. It takes a while to get to Satan. There's a lot of lead up of gathering all the people from the college to meet up at the old church. And of course we see the old priest dying, and he's the last of his brotherhood of sleep, who is watching over the devil's lava lamp in the old church.
You'd think that at that point in his life, he'd realize, look, I'm starting to go. When I make a turkey sandwich, I make sure the lid's back on the mayonnaise, correct? Before I put it in the fridge. All right. Maybe he may be living like a bachelor. He might be the only one left, but at least he's not doing that. Okay. That's like not shaking up the mustard before you try to squirt it on and you get the mustard water. No one has time for that. Very irresponsible not just to go up to the devil's lava lamp and give it a quick little lefty loosey, righty tighty, a little bit of, all right, cool. We're all in. We're all done. We're all good in there. Wonderful. I think I'm going to go take a nap and hold my weird little box fondly.
Well, I guess he was on the way to meet with the archdiocese in Los Angeles, to meet with the cardinal who's over it, and then tell him that the sleeper has awoken. And then he dies.
Paul Atreides was in this movie.
Yes, the sleeper has awoken.
Tell me of your homeworld, Uso.
I'm excited for Dune.
Oh, God, I am. And you know what? It opens up the day I have surgery.
Oh, really?
So I really hope it's on HBO Max, dude, because I just want
to. It is on HBO Max.
I want to be high as balls and watch this movie.
You'll be on the spice. You'll be able to full time while you're watching the movie.
I've already got blue eyes. It'd be great to have them blue on blue.
And your lips will be stained red from the spice.
Oh, the juice of Safu. It will serve as a warning. Oopsie. Oh, the geek runs deep.
I'm excited for Dune. I really am, because Denis Villeneuve has done a lot of really visually compelling movies, and I'm excited to see what he comes up with and how. You know, the sad thing is it's only about the first half of the book, so hopefully it'll do well in the box office. And it's doing really well overseas right now, so hopefully it'll earn enough so they can greenlight the second half.
I am really just looking forward to seeing Dave Bautista as the Beast Raban I think that'd be great. Mm-hmm. But if they don't hurry up and make it, the kid playing Paul is going to go through puberty and that's going to blow everything.
Yeah. I don't know. He seems like he's been around for a little bit. He just doesn't seem to age. What the hell's the guy's name? Oh,
Timothy something.
Oh yeah. Timothy Chalamet.
Okay. Gesundheit.
Well, I watched a couple of reviews of Prince of Darkness, and it put together a couple of things that I didn't really notice, or maybe I was too dense to notice. I guess the supernova sent the subatomic particles that woke up the son of Satan in the tube. I guess I didn't really realize that the first time. I thought it was just something that was coincidentally going on since he was waking up and all this weird shit was happening in the world. So I didn't realize that was what spurred on everything to change.
Yeah. There's always that background setup stuff, especially in 80s movies. And I remember them mentioning that. I don't remember if I ever caught it, but I did catch it this viewing.
Yeah. And I watched it really closely, and it wasn't until I saw the analysis where this guy really broke it down. I go, oh yeah, duh. That's what caused everything to start, you know? And I just like the buildup is really cool, 'cause you see all the ants and the worms. And I wonder if you could call an exterminator. I got some window worms I need to get rid of. Do you guys get rid of window worms?
Everything defies gravity in the movie too. It's the best part.
And how fast would those earthworms dry out if they were stuck to your window?
Depends on the humidity.
It's not very humid in LA, I don't think, though, right?
It didn't look. It did not well. It depends what time of year.
And I love this kind of, the homeless people being controlled by the son of Satan. It's kind of cool. Of course, Alice Cooper sticks out as the leader of the homeless brigade, and he puts on a kind of a cool nonverbal performance.
Yeah, what was that? I guess he's the only one that can move above the speed of a shuffle.
Well, the older lady, the lady with the cup, when she stabbed the guy to death, she moved pretty fast.
And then there was getting bicycled in the chest too. That was that one took a bit.
Well, apparently John Carpenter saw an Alice Cooper concert, and he does that trick on stage where he stabs one of his bandmates with a microphone stand. And he asked, Alice Cooper if he could use that in the movie. And he said, yeah, if you put me in the movie, I'll let you do that. He's like, okay, well, we'll just have to retroactively fit it for your character so that you did it with a bike instead of a microphone stand. So that's where that came from.
And it was pretty, I mean, we'd been into the movie at that point, and we've got all the setup. It reminded me of those special op movies. Like, there's an alien that's landed and we're trying to communicate with it, and you bring in 15 different specialists and nobody knows who anybody is, and nobody's getting information until they absolutely need it. This totally had that vibe.
Yeah, it did. Totally. I agree with you. I hadn't thought about it that way, but that's exactly true. Like The Arrival or some sort of alien invasion flick where they get all the experts. Yeah, that's a good synopsis. That's a good point. I didn't think about that.
That's
good point, Neil.
That's what I'm here. That's what I'm here for. I'm just waiting for the rim shot after I said it.
Oh, here we go.
Thank you.
We don't get our first kill until 35 minutes into the movie. The guy gets stabbed with a bike. He looks like second tier Sheldon to me. I expect him to get stabbed and go bazinga.
I really did not even pay attention to those guys, because it was they're such secondary characters. They're just there to show that the situation, that shit has gotten real. That's it.
I really like when they have the briefing with the priest and the professor, and then everybody kind of breaks up and they all go to their own little areas, and they Calder looks like he's just been just devastated with the news. Like, he's trying to put it all in the implications together, and he looks just like totally like he's seen a ghost. And the other guy's saying, this is total bullshit and stuff like that. So I kind of like the way they did that, because it's kind of a true reaction to a group of people. And Calder is religious because he's got his cross around his neck. You see it a couple of times, and that kind of helps you, offhandedly tell you what his beliefs are and stuff. So I thought that was pretty cool.
I'm still trying to remember the spectral analysis guy with the glasses and the dark hair, you know, he leaves and he's the guy that gets offed. He was on another one of those 80s private detective shows where they flew around in a helicopter and he had a robot.
Tom Bray is his name. He was in, let's look, One Day at a Time, Remington Steele. Man, everybody was on Remington Steele. Quincy M.E., Last of the Great Survivors, Riptide, which is a TV series, Harry, which is another TV series that lasted for a little bit. He was on New Kids on the Block, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes TV series.
I think it was Riptide because that was because they had like a helicopter and he had a robot and he would always say like, oh, that's Boss. That's so Boss.
You have a really good memory of 80s TV series like that.
Would you like to know why?
Because your mom watched them, I bet.
No. I didn't have premium cable, Eric.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was watching stuff on HBO. You were watching Simon and Simon.
I was watching stuff like that because we lived so far out in the sticks. Dude, you saw our TV antenna. It was like 30 feet tall. It was like the tripod kind of deal. It had three poles with a little crisscross in between it. And that was it. We got that. And all we could get was NBC and ABC. And then later on, we could get CBS. But you had to go out with like a pair of vice grips and physically rotate the pole. And we had it marked with marker. Like, here's where you go. That's where you get the CBS. When you got that, you could go. So for that knowledge, you're welcome.
All right. I appreciate it. You're bringing that to bringing the info.
It sounds like the 80-year-old info. If he's on the Kid Win the One show with the thing, you know.
Always tease my wife because she's getting to be that way. You know, I like that movie he's in. You know that thing? That thing where they're in? I'm like, oh no, here it comes. So we eventually, Susan, you know, the one with the glasses, she goes down into the basement by herself, first mistake, and she's the first one to get shot with the Satan juice.
And she had the stereotypical 80s look. I remember watching this for the first time and being surprised that she wasn't the heroine.
Yeah, she kind of had that kind of fluffy hair, glasses. Yeah, she did look like she would be the main female character, definitely. But, yep. What would she call it? Satan juice? Satan saliva? Satan soda? You know, what was that?
I had some other names for it, but
Beelzebub's Bukkake.
Beelzebukkake. That would be a good one.
That's the next Subatomic Jesus album.
Oh my God, that's gross. Oh, that'd be pretty good though.
Well, the concept of the movie is really cool. I really enjoy it, especially the whole evil is literally true. It's the antimatter to the matter that exists. So if there is God, there's the anti-God, and it's on a different plane of existence. But the son of Satan somehow was on our plane and was captured and confined into the lava lamp years and years ago, and finally has the ability to break his dad out of mirror world.
How did we not think of Satan semen?
Satan semen.
How did we?
That's true.
Where are you, David? Where are you?
Where is David?
David, you need to. David would have so much to say on this. And then he'd have a story like, oh, you know, I was dating some gal. he's literally like our Norm MacDonald.
He is. He has a story for every situation. Well, you know, it reminds me when I was modeling for a while and modeling tuxedos. And then, you know, there you go. I stole a coffee pot and then was on the lam, you know.
And then took a semester off school to smoke weed with a friend. That's a good way to just end pretty much every story.
Took a semester off to smoke weed.
That's right. There we go.
So Jesus was an extraterrestrial sent to Earth to warn us about the anti-God, but he became too popular and they crucified him. All this stuff is really cool. And one thing I like is all the religious stuff is pretty much made up. There isn't any sort of like omen or exorcist kind of real Bible theology in it. It's just stuff that John Carpenter thought was kind of cool and threw in there. Even like when the lady's typing out Lisa, the lady who has expert in ancient languages, all the stuff that she's typing out on the computer, all the weird stuff is just stuff that John Carpenter came up with. There's no like true script, you know, scripture or anything that's similar to that.
Their little explanation of what the lava lamp was is it's like energy and amniotic fluid that's beginning to coalesce that can only unlock itself from the inside.
Yes. Prebiotic fluid.
Pre and post and all that. Why didn't it like coalesce into like a little demon fetus or something? And I really wanted to see the thing work the lock. It's like, oh, it only locks from the inside. But instead, we get the lazy ass priest who can't like pop down the mayo jar really quick, and then we've got to watch it. We've got to watch it pool on the ceiling,
and then pour into poor Kelly's face,
and then
she gets the Blue Oyster Cult symbol on her arm,
and then just demonic gleeking everywhere.
Oh, yeah, gleeking, that's a good word for it. Oh, that's funny.
It's a demonic gleek. And this is an argument right here, kids. Here's a little advice from your Uncle Neil. Don't breathe through your freaking mouth. You'll save yourself eternal torment and your soul if you just don't walk around being a mouth breather. If some of these people would have just walked up to like, nice big deep breath through the nose with your mouth closed, you're fine.
Yeah, you're not going to get a face full of Satan soda in your face and turn into a zombie.
And who in their right mind, anybody, is calmly going to sit there when Satan's 1980s bride is crawling all over you while you're trying to take a nap?
Yeah, she's like, I'm not into this. And then blah, I'm in the face. Then poor Lisa is now typing away, I live, which I thought was kind of cool.
And again, This goes back to so many movies we watched. If anybody who's the hero in this movie would have just reared back and put a heel into somebody's forehead, we could have saved ourselves so many problems. So, oh, hey, what are you doing? Grab the elbow, bam, right in the head. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, a quick boot to the head, knock the dude out, wouldn't have marked it. You would have gone on your happy way and hung out at your daddy's house.
Oh, speaking of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I watched part two last night. Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2.
He's lighting up the coat hanger and scratching the plate in his head.
Yes. I watched it. I enjoyed it. It is completely goofy and just dumb. And it has a few scary parts, but it is completely the opposite of the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Chop Top, played by Bill Moseley, steals the show on that one. Music is my life!
I have very vivid memories of that movie. Because it's just so ridiculous. And just Dennis Hopper out of nowhere with the two chainsaws. It's so good.
You ruined my Sonny Bono wig.
What the hell were we even talking
about? Prince of Darkness.
What the hell were we even talking about?
Watch out when possessed people by Satan gleek at you.
Okay, good.
Duck.
Yes.
Kelly's got the Blue Oyster Cult symbol on her arm, which is apparently the astrologer's staff. She's getting filled up with all the Satan goo, turning into the son of Satan. I always thought she looked really cool, very gooey and gross.
She reminded me of Pizza the Hut from Spaceballs.
Pizza the Hut will take out. What did he say? Take out for you or something like that, or send out for you.
I don't remember, but it's just she looked like Pizza the Hut.
Yeah, a little overdone on the gooiness.
Yeah, she was just
like Walters.
No, I'm just saying she was a few bits of gooey away from having a Cenobite come crawling out. Jesus wept. They're actually rebooting it, and they're having a female as Pinhead.
Yeah, I think that's kind of cool because there's other female Cenobites. Of course, you know, nerddom fanboys are upset. Why are they doing that? You know, and blah, 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 blah. But the guy who plays Pinhead is up in age, and he just could not convincingly play the role. And the guys that they've got to play him in the other straight to video movies look awful. There's like this super like chubby Pinhead.
Yeah.
You open the fridge. We came.
We'll tear your soul. Is that right? Am I going to, the soul? Is that what we're telling? Yeah, it's the soul, Pinhead. Okay. Are you sure? Okay. Man, oy, that's all this standing. Will tear your soul apart. Did I do that part good? It's just a little too old. And it's all the guys that look like the guy who got his neck broken that are complaining.
Yeah, the neckbeard brigade. Actually, a hell priest should be a guy. And, you know, if you can do an original spin on it and it is not just a copy and it's got a fresh take on it, go for it. Change it up all you want. As long as it's just not a dumb retread. If it's a dumb retread, then you should get points taken away for unoriginality. But if you want to, you have an idea that can take it in a new direction, do it. Why do people get so hidebound about the canon or the way things used to be?
All right. I have some what could be considered mildly disturbing questions.
Yes.
All right. So now that you're ready for it. All right. It is apparently ridiculously easy to break someone's neck in a movie.
Oh, yeah.
Ridiculously easy. I'm wondering how hard would it be? And like how much force would you have to put into that? I'm not a weak guy. I'm fairly strong, but I'm like, dude, am I going to do that? What if the guy rotates? Do I need to stop that shoulder from the direction I'm rotating? And then if I am strong enough to break his neck and I'm holding onto his chin, why wouldn't I just dislocate the jaw and yank that out? What's the what kind of strength is it going to take to keep the spine intact as opposed to keeping the jaw muscle in there? I am full of questions every time I see somebody's neck get broken in a movie.
Well, I think I've watched some true crime documentary where these two kids try to kill a friend or whatever, and they thought that they could kill him by twisting his neck like they did in the movies, and unfortunately they were not correct on the way they do that. So movies do give you the false, you know, sense that you could just easily snap somebody's neck just you know, with barely a twist of your arms.
I'm just going to Austin Power it and just walk up and go judo chop. Be done with it.
Neck twist. One of my favorite parts of the movie is seeing when Kelly, who's possessed, who's now fully the son of Satan, sees the mirror for the first time, and she can see that she can see Father through the mirror, and she pokes her fingers through the mirror and then realizes it's too small to pull him out. I just think that's such a cool visual when she actually gets to a real mirror, just the way that the hand going through the mercury that they used and then out, you know, into the water. I always thought that was just the coolest thing ever. I thought it was really, really effective.
So you got, the way they did that. You've got all that physical change going on and then perfectly white eyes. I would have bought it if they'd have been a little bit bloodshot. Just saying.
Yeah. I do like Walter's reaction. He has a very natural reaction, I think, freaking out, you know, he's, but he didn't do anything to help him, you know, help him tunnel through though. You know, the people on the other side.
He didn't do much the whole movie.
Yeah. He was the skeptic and probably really what I would do. I'd be like, oh my God, get me out of here. And then I would run away, you know, as soon as things were, you know, over.
He just kind of hung out and had snacks and dug around in the cooler.
And said snide comments.
So I can see how.
So I can really relate to him.
This could be you. 100%.
Yeah, exactly. Damn. I relate to him 100%. Yes.
He's a very relatable character. Okay. There we go.
So we're finally getting just really the payoff when we see, you know, that everybody's taken over. Kelly's now possessed by the son of Satan or is embodying him. She tries to pull him out of the other plane. And I really like the way the hand looked. I was expecting like Tim Curry's Darkness from Legend to come out for the way the clawed dark nailed hand looked.
Yes.
I always thought that was really sweet.
Yes. But we didn't talk about the second most important part of this whole mess. When they're pulling Walter through the wall, a normal person or an angry person, you give me one brick and the back of Satan semen gobbler's little groupie, and she ain't getting up. And they're just, oh, stop it. Quit. Let me just give you another little tap. Quit. Stop. No. Well,
they do throw her out of a window, so.
Well, they throw her out of a window, which was a little bit over the top. Nothing? No.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Okay. All right. But one.
That was a real pain to throw her through the window. All right.
Oh, surprised she didn't see through what they were going to do. Thank you. But that I'm sorry, a brick, the back of your skull, night, night. I don't know. Like, oh, we'll tap you on the back. No, right at the skull. You smash that until it goes squishy, done and over. This is, again, why we need to write a horror movie, but we'd have to have like multiple bad guys. Like, oh my God, one of Satan's henchmen's come through. Bam. Well, crap. Neil finished that one off. What's Eric doing? Then we move on. That part annoyed. I just don't like it when people, I like the movies where the heroine, cause it's usually the heroine at the end, who's the one who's just lost her shit and having to fight for her life. Right. Cause the guys are always the ones that are like, I'm going to see where that noise came from. And then bam, you're up on a meat hook. But when they actually just decide to go F stuff up, like I need some survival instinct. For me, it's not relatable until I see someone willing to split your skull open to make sure that they're the one that goes home and gets to ride in the back of the ambulance with the blanket looking shaken.
That's true. Yeah. Hopefully your fight or flight fight would kick in and you would do whatever you could to get out of it. We forgot to talk about Calder slashing his neck with a piece of wood and how freaky he laughed afterwards. He definitely was the creepier of the people who were taken over by the devil.
I think we got really ripped off that we only got to hear Insect Guy's voice. And then the one guy was a giggler.
Yeah, that part was cool, though, when the guy was outside, the one who got stabbed by the crazy homeless lady, when he was just full of all the bugs and he gives him the warning, you know, pray for death. And he just falls and breaks apart and stuff. Really good practical effects in this movie all the way around.
Yeah, but that, it did bug me, though. That's the thing.
It bugged you?
Thank you. yeah, I wanted more. I think why did John Carpenter, I see what you did. He finally had a chance to make those two quiet. And then you sexist John Carpenter. I get it.
So I think that, the movie is one of those movies that could benefit from a big budget remake. As long as John Carpenter was at the helm, I think a lot of the special effects and other things would be a lot cooler. Maybe you would get to see a little bit more of Satan, and I don't know, but you know, this movie is great on its own, but sometimes I think, you know, an older movie could benefit from a good remake, but you have to keep the same people involved to redo it. Just kind of like Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2 or something like that, where you can just remake it with a bigger budget.
You know, I think you could do that, or you need someone who really, really loves the material and is a deep fan. Because you think like John Favreau has done a ton for Marvel and for Star Wars, because he's a huge fan, and it's obvious how he puts those together. And then what he did, like, I'm sorry, The Mandalorian, so damn good. Really, really fun. But it's made by a fan, and it's not like when you get a film and it's laborious because here's someone like, I'm getting paid to do this.
And who's the guy who wrote Clone Wars is also part of the, is it Filioni or David something? I can't remember his last name, but he's the guy who wrote Clone Wars. He's in charge of The Mandalorian and stuff like that. And it's obvious that he loves the material. And you're right. You need somebody who is faithful to the material, but is willing to kind of expound on it and make it better, but also keeping it faithful to the essence of what makes the show or the movie good.
Yeah. You need someone who's given it some thought, who's grown up with it. I'm telling you, man, you're wasting your talents. You're wasting your talents.
I do like the ending. Poor Catherine. She sacrifices herself and pushes the Kelly and the claw back into the other plane. And like, I keep wanting to say Dr. Loomis, Father Loomis. Donald Pleasance throws the axe and breaks the mirror, and they're trapped on the other side. I think that the last flash where she's like reaching out in the dark water is really, really cool. And of course you get the jump scare at the end. We haven't really talked about the dream, the cool dream, the shared dream that everybody has.
I did really like, okay, the idea of of particles that move faster than light, the whole idea of tachyons. I enjoyed, because I'm not a physicist by any means, but I am a physics buff. I do read a lot of physics. I do listen to a lot of like 3 or 4 different podcasts about physics and astrophysics. The subject interests me, but it's one of those things when you realize, like, I'm not smart enough to do this for a living. But I did like that he addressed the whole thing of, you're not just moving something back in time, you're moving stuff back in space as well, because we are moving around a giant supermassive black hole. So if you move backwards in time, you have to project back to where the planet was at that point in time in space, if you're going to aim something to go backwards in time, because you're going to do something that's moving faster than light. Mm-hmm. We're talking about relativity. I enjoyed the hell out of that. Now, I actually know a dude who's got a PhD in astrophysics. I'm going to run this by him and ask him. So I'll know soon if Sean laughs his ass off at me when I bring this idea up to him. But I like that he did give this a little bit of thought. So you're not just like zapping a dream backwards. You're actually having, these guys are having to think about it. And of course, you know, in 1999, the year I got married, we totally had the technology to do that.
I always enjoy when a movie is made in the 80s and they go to the future and it's past already, just like in Escape from New York and Blade Runner and Back to the Future and all that kind of stuff, that, you know, this is what the future is going to be like. And then we're like, here in 2021, we're like, it's pretty cool, but, you know, I don't have my Nexus 6 pleasure robot or jetpack or Rosie the robot, all this kind of stuff.
I live in California. I cannot imagine people with flying cars here.
That's true. People are terrible at driving as it is.
Yes. I can't imagine flying cars. They would really have to like rework the whole licensing procedure, the way that works. Cause it's just not a good thing here.
Wow. We've really filled up a lot of time on the Prince of Darkness because it's awesome. It's a good movie. Check it out. If you haven't seen it, it holds up. I love the ideas in the movie, and I like that it is low budget and it's set basically in one location. But the dialogue and the ideas and the practical effects, the music and everything, it just is pure John Carpenter. So if you're a John Carpenter enthusiast, this is definitely one to check out.
I did not realize how many John Carpenter movies I actually liked until we started talking about this. And then you actually mm-hmm. made some notes about it, because I'm looking down the list and it's like, I've seen and pretty much enjoy all the movies on that list.
Yes. As with most podcasts, I made a list of my top John Carpenter movies. And of course, number one is The Thing. Number two is Halloween. Three is Big Trouble in Little China, which we'll get to eventually. Love that movie. Prince of Darkness, Escape from New York, They Live, In the Mouth of Madness, Christine, Starman, and The Fog. Those are my top 10. All good movies.
100% works for me. We're in agreement, good sir.
Sweet. Also, 87 was a pretty good year for horror movies. Sometimes the late 80s doesn't get good enough credit for some of the, like, well, 89 was really bad, but 87 had a decent run there. We have Evil Dead 2, A Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, The Lost Boys, which we've covered, Predator, which we need to cover, Hellraiser, we got an episode for that, Monster Squad, I'm sure we'll get to that eventually, Creepshow 2, which I enjoy, it's not great, but it's fun. Angel Heart, which is pretty good. I haven't seen it in quite a while. It may not be as good as I remember. I'd have to check it out. The Believers, which is a fun voodoo movie. And then The Hidden, which is an underseen kind of movie with Kyle MacLachlan as a space alien. And the alien there he's chasing after is like a slug that goes through people's mouths and stuff. It's pretty good. Have you seen The Hidden?
I am trying to think if I have. It's not bringing any bells.
It's one of those that I saw on HBO that is like, wow, that's really good. It's pretty good. I remember recording it, watching it a lot. It's kind of a quirky little sci-fi horror movie.
I don't know why I'm only thinking of I Come in Peace. That's the only thing that's coming to mind.
I Come in Peace. Remember that?
Yeah, you go in pieces.
So that was Prince of Darkness. We do need some movie suggestions for November for Turkey Month. And I was thinking that Samurai Cop should be in along the suggestions.
All right.
So save Neil from watching Samurai Cop or Howard the Duck and send us some suggestions.
I was pretty much commanded because my wife was talking about what we're going to be watching. And this is the movie. And she's like, God, why do you guys watch movies like that? You need to watch a good movie. I said, well, you know, we got Turkey November coming up and we're going to be watching Howard the Duck. And then my wife's like, I really liked Howard the Duck. All right then. So yes, well, I do have permission from on high to talk about Howard the Duck.
Sweet. So I'll watch that.
So at least I'll be able to watch it with my wife.
I'm looking forward to Turkey Month. It should be fun.
I've seen the list, man, and it's pretty funny.
So. All right. Well, thanks everybody.
Yeah, thank you, everybody. Have a good week. And we've got two more weeks and I might get to talk to you like really loaded up on painkillers, so that'll be fun.
Sweet. That'll be interesting. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Retro Video Store Podcast.